All right.
Let's do this thing.
Hello, everybody. Good morning. I'm Matt Burton. I'm with SRC Logistics, and I've been with SRC roughly since 1995 and have had the pleasure of being involved in a lot of our sales and marketing presentations and our high involvement planning. How many of you were in the high involvement planning yesterday? Do I have any? Okay, so a few of you have seen that portion of it. Louder? Up? Is that better? Okay. And again, it involves a lot of different aspects in our business and how we're going to influence the forecast. Hence, talking about forward forecasting, you know, we're going to cover a number of different topics here. The experience that I've had has been with multiple divisions related to either the service side or actually some of the products that we would produce. And I'm going to let Darren do his introduction on his experience with SRC.
Darren Bridges, I'm over sales and marketing at SRC Heavy Duty and SRC Power. I've been with the company about 8 years. I'm one of the few that have not been raised at SRC. I've had a variety of businesses I've worked with or owned in the past, anywhere from startups to Fortune 500 companies. But glad to see you guys here. I'm surprised how many people are interested in forecasting. This is exciting.
We've got a few quotes that we've pulled out. Are we good back there? It's $5 for everybody that's late, okay? Yeah, spread out amongst all of us here. You know, I don't want to be a part of forecasting as long as the future is involved. One of the things that we wanted to ask before we get going here, what does forecasting mean to you? All right, we have to have a whole variety because I'm pretty sure you're not all in sales, are you? No. Okay. Somebody. Ask the
Rennie answer. Has prizes for anyone who contributes to the conversation. Who said what? Yes, sir.
I said active leadership.
Okay.
Active leadership.
I like that. We need more.
Resource allocation.
Very good.
That's good.
Creating a plan.
Yeah. Direction.
Direction. Sound like Tom Helmes to me.
Influencing the future.
That's part of one of our quotes. That's good. I like that. I've been reading ahead.
Matt, isn't it just adding a certain percentage to last year's sales?
That's what I normally do, right? So, you know, what is it? The purpose of forward forecasting is not to predict the future, but to influence it, right? How many people in here can influence the future to your business? It's everybody, right? Everybody plays a part in it. The beauty of it is, if you're not in sales, you usually don't get tarred and feathered quite like we do, right? So one of the things as we go through this is, you know, we're going to talk about some of the influences that you can make and how everybody participates in the forecast. You know, it's an educated opinion. It's all the things that you mentioned, the active leadership, you know, being, you know, trying to, again, make sure that you do not miss your forecast, all right, if you can avoid it. But how many in here have ever hit a 100% accurate forecast? Me, of course, but, you know. No, I mean, it's not something that, you know, anybody would expect to get 100% accurate on it. But we have to mitigate the impacts to your business. You know, a near-term vision and the personal commitment, you know, everybody has to be a part of this. It's an early warning system. In business, no one likes surprises, right? We have to do our best to avoid those surprises, and some things we can't control. We talked a lot about it even yesterday, 2008, right? That was a surprise for many of us. And I don't know many people that were not surprised by the changes, you know, and what happened in the world, you know, that could impact it. So what are we going to do to try to forecast those impacts or have that action plan in order to back it up? You want to make an impact where there's still time to make a difference. This is where you'll hear us talk a lot about frequency. Right, we need to keep communicating on what the plan is and where we're going. And when things change, you know, we need to know as quick as possible in order to react and make that change in the plan. or make the adjustments. And one of you mentioned the allocating resources, right? This is frequency of reviewing your forecast will allow you to make those changes. Encourages employees to think about cause and effect. How can they individually influence the numbers, right? Proactive rather than just passive, right? Let's not wait till the end of the month. I mean, how many people say, okay, here's how we did for the month, right? Let's hope we do better next month. Here's what happened. All right, sorry about that. Creates a sense of urgency. So what would you say on your forecasting? What does sense of urgency mean to you? Why do you need to forward forecast, and how does that create a sense of urgency? Anybody? Again, going back to that. So Darren and I were talking about this yesterday, and I was just kind of like, Darren, what would you consider, you know, the sense of urgency?
This week, baby.
Yeah, this week. Got to get that number, right? We got a number to hit this month. Now, at the division I'm at right now, we're on track. Things are going great from that standpoint. But what I'm thinking about forward forecasting is 2018. What's it going to look like in 2018? What can I do now? Because I know that typically in our environment, our sales cycle can be 18 to 24 months. That seems to be the magic time frame for when we start something before it becomes a true revenue-generating piece of business. And so you cannot have too many gaps of not filling that pipeline or thinking about those items that are out in the future like that, and hope to hit it whenever that time comes. So again, that is where forecasting is not just necessarily about today, but it is about, you know, next week, next month, next year. And that's why we encourage, again, to look out there. And we're always looking out 5 years. And so again, I hope the economists are wrong. I hope that we come into 2018 and we not only just hit the numbers that we anticipate, but we're able to add on top of that to fend off any other types of challenges. And it makes us smarter about the business, right? You can't, if you do that, you know, here's what I did last year, plus 5%, 10%, whatever your magic number is that you think you want to grow, right? You're going to miss a lot, right? And you really don't understand why you're hitting that number. And as somebody yesterday told me that they do 6%, I believe it was 6% every year. That's what their forecast is for growth. I don't know if that's realistic. Maybe it's only 2%, but maybe it could have been 20% if they'd got more engaged in the process. And the ability to forecast accurately is how well you understand your numbers. Every number has a story behind it. And each one of us are responsible for impacting or contributing a number. All right. Here's our forecast for this presentation. You will walk away with a template, all right? Now, I've learned that from a previous presentation where we didn't provide them with anything to walk out of the room with. What you will walk out of the room with if you're interactive is some little novelties from the great game, but you will have a copy of this presentation. I know they're going to provide flash drives for everybody, so you'll have everything that we talk about today. And you'll also have the opportunity to talk with Darren or I or anybody from the Great Game on additional questions you may have that are more micro or specific to your business. Can everybody real quick clap really, really, really loud? Yeah! Yeah! I love it! Yes! Forward forecasting! I love it! That happened yesterday so many times, I'm like, why are we not making noise? So they're going to be like, this is crazy, all right? And each one of you guys can influence the future, all right?
They just did.
It just did. Because I got a feeling there'll be retaliation on that one. You guys are awesome. And we're going to have a great time. And if you don't, Darren and I promised we will. So, all right. The art of forecasting.
Yeah, Darren. So here's a basic formula. I'm going to show you the formulas. I'll probably be your data guy, but you've got frequency, you have, of course there is the data, we'll get into that later. You have some assumptions, some basic assumptions, we're going to get into some of that, and then you tie into the frequency, which we'll tie into at the end. We've based this whole presentation upon the frequency, just to give you an outline. You know, people like to know where you're headed with this presentation. We're going to start with the high level of what we do annually. Then we're going to go into a little bit more of the monthly sales reviews and get kind of specific on how we do forecasting there. We'll get into then the weekly huddles and the interaction you see at that point, how forecasts are involved and all the people that contribute to that. And then at the end, the daily conversations. I didn't expect animation. Isn't that the truth? Anybody ever drive a tractor? Or a kayak down a river? You know, if you're looking right there at your feet, you're not going to be going straight, but you got to have a target up ahead. And so high involvement planning, when we were putting this presentation together, this is not a presentation about HIP. But there's so many things that go into HIP for the annual plan that, you know, there's aspects of it we're going to touch upon. I'm going to provide you some slides that came from actual presentations. Burton and I have done enough of these where we have certain information we share every time. And we're, those that are kind of highlighted in the pink, the market and industry analysis, the competitive data, customer overview, what's in development, sales performance, and then some of the customer intel are what we're going to show you. Let's start here with industry indicators. Now, I want to stress, our intent is not to make you guys experts on remanufacturing. We're business to business. How many of you guys are business to business? Can I see a show? Good. There's some of you that can relate. How many are you going more retail? Retail side. Okay. Are you guys by chance a lot of web-based sales? No? How about service industry? How many? Okay. Okay. That kind of gives us an idea of what we're working with. There's indicators in everyone's industry. We deal in trucking, we deal in agriculture, we deal in construction, and you can see a lot of these numbers, how they make an impact on that business. If interest rates go shooting sky high, it's going to affect how many homes are built. If there's not a lot of homes being built, there's not a lot of construction equipment being used. Not a lot of construction equipment being used, they're not wearing out a lot of engines, and that's where we make our money. But a lot of these indicators we look at, it helps draw in the assumptions, okay? This is a specific example of one that could have bitten us pretty hard. Compressed nat gas has been a really hot topic in our industry for quite some time. And there was a long period of time where everybody thought it was going to be the future. All these engines were going to go away from diesel and go into CNG, and there was tons of hype. You could not open up an industry trade magazine without hearing about all the investments that were being made into it. And there was good reason for it, is because the delta, or the price between diesel and compressed nat gas, was so large that a guy could invest in a CNG engine and get a payback within under 2 years, which is kind of the rule of thumb. But then diesel started going down. We started increasing production. And fortunately, we saw that taking place. But guess what was interesting about in the market? The hype was still there. And somebody kept mentioning resources. We had these people just begging us more and more resources to help with all this development. We made a conscious decision to back that off. Had we not, we would have invested a lot with very little return. Are there any of you that have examples of indicators in your industries that you're looking at, you could share with the crowd? Anyone? Yes, sir. Thank you.
School graduation rate.
Oh, yeah? What kind of business are you in?
Missouri Southern State University.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's a great example.
That was definitely worth a prize. Thank you, Rennie.
Yes, sir. Grain prices, and how do the grain prices affect what you guys do?
Obviously, the higher the commodity prices are for grain, the
sure,
more likely the co-ops are going to be putting out grain.
You bet.
Grain bins,
yes, sir.
We watch the architectural building index that we were contractors, and that gives us a 12 to 24 month snapshot ahead.
You and I could probably be sharing a lot of the same information, but yeah, exactly. Yes, sir, in the back.
Flu rates.
What'd you say?
Rates of influenza.
Flu rates. That's a different one.
So you're in the automotive industry, obviously. Yeah, I'm smart like that.
Yes, sir.
Compliance regulations for security.
You in the alarm business?
No.
Technology security. Yeah. Yes, sir. Overall? You in the marketing business?
We write custom software apps.
Gotcha. That's good. Yes, sir.
Currency evaluation.
Currency, yeah. That's a great example. We sell products into Canada, and right now it's basically a penalty to buy products from the U.S. to be shipped up there, and it's affected our overall sales there. Prices haven't changed, demand hadn't changed, just the cost due to the currency. That's a great one.
Kara, over here.
We try and forecast how much dairy prices are going to go up when school starts, because schools are the biggest consumers of dairy.
That's a good one.
They jump every year. Sometimes they jump really high, and so we have to try and figure that out for our food costs.
Are you with Mueller by chance?
No, she's not. I was just going to say, I know we've got a Mueller representative here as well, and
yeah,
you guys could things. You could talk.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
Governmental regulations concerning water.
Okay.
We do water reclamation systems.
Okay.
So California's things that are happening in California.
I want to feed off that one. That's a great one. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. I know, Matt, I'm driving you crazy. Whoops. It's not up here, but we also look at our customers. And when you talked about government regulations, one of the things that's driving a lot of our demand is EPA regulations. The engines are getting so expensive nowadays that in order to buy a new vehicle, you're paying a premium because of all the things that go in to make them cleaner. And it has increased our business for reman. They want to keep their old stuff running longer. But government regulations is by far, and as our CEO will often say, he can forecast a lot of things, but forecasting what the government's going to do next tends to stress him out more than anything.
Yeah.
So we do. So you got the overall industry indicators, and you guys can see. You've had some examples. Then we get into the customer health. And, you know, we just... A lot of this information you can find nowadays over the internet. A lot of these companies we deal with are publicly traded. Matt gives an example. A lot of times we'll buy one stock of a company, so we get all their performance information. But why would this matter? Why do customer health matter? And I'll give you a quick example. Let's say you've got a customer that's a little tight on cash. What's their buying patterns going to be like? What are they going to do? Think about their inventory levels. They're going to be trying to slash those as much as possible. Work that way downstream. What goes next? A lot of drop-in orders, a lot of urgency put on you. How do you respond to that? Do you simply start charging a premium for the drop-in orders? Do you start carrying a little bit more inventory if they're a good customer? But those are the kind of things you can forecast based on customer health. In the pipeline, development. One of the things we caught early on in the first few years, we really started doing a lot of forecasting, is we would constantly look at everything that was in front of us today, and we would neglect people like my good friend Chris Kleinfeld in engineering, who had products being launched. It's so important to know when these new products or services are coming out and when they will truly be ready for sale. A lot of times they may be through with development, but you still have to go through a validation period. Or there's a rollout, or how long will it take to get the customers educated on the product, to get them well marketed? Our product primarily, but that's a very good point. A lot of times the customers, they may be asking for a product for you, but they may not be ready to roll it out to the marketplace yet. If you can understand what it takes to fill that supply chain and also get the end customer educated on this piece. But never fails when we do our forecasting every year. One of the things we always have to remind ourselves is what's coming down the pike that we got to get our eyes upon. Okay? Look at this. What does this slide tell you guys? Seasonality. Huh? Isn't that the prettiest slide you've ever seen?
It's the perfect customer.
This is actually a customer we work with that deals with General Motors, believe it or not. But look how perfectly aligned they are in their seasonality. And that's 13 years of pretty consistent buying pattern.
So just find that customer
and
just deal with them, right?
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's not reality. Is that reality to anyone in here? This is reality for us. When you group these customers together into the different product lines, it's all over the board. And that's the big part of this, is no one expects it to be perfect. We know what we're up against. Life is not fair, and stuff happens. And being able to try to get ahead of it as best you can, or at least be prepared for it when it does hit. This is my favorite slide. It's the most boring slide, but any of you who have had backgrounds in supply chain will appreciate it. We have three different engine models here. We are driven by this as our potential cell. So in other words, there's a population of 10,552 of these 6.7-liter engines in the marketplace. We're not going to repair more engines that are available out in the market, okay? So we know what the end caps are going to be. For instance, if somebody has lawnmowers that they sell, how many people in your industry or in your area that you sell are in the lawn care business? How many are they capable of buying in a year? Or if you even sell residential, what are the populations, residents, homeowners in that area? The gentleman mentioned the people graduating from high school. What is that number? That's your population. That's a perfect example of this. But whoops, then we get into what portion. And over time, we realize that typically our sales of the population per year, and we're waiting for these units to break down, is about a tenth to two-tenths of a percent of that population. We had one situation right here where it became 1.4%. It was an anomaly. There was a certain situation in the marketplace that caused that to happen. If an uneducated person would have said, okay, for the next year's forecast, let's go for another 90. But we knew that was an anomaly. And in order to keep better prepared, we dropped that forecast down. Core is our raw material. Without old engines coming back, we have no raw material to work with. Another example might be there's a company called Askinovsky Chocolate in Springfield. They make beautiful high-end chocolate that's premium price, but they use a very specific bean from over in some jungle that is hard to get. And they have to constantly keep their eyes on the availability of those beans to make their chocolate. That's an example of raw material. Right here, even though we think we can sell some more engines, the potential selling, 32 to 23, there's no raw material available. So how do you forecast that? You don't. That's where other departments come into play. It's not just sales. Sales starts it, but you have to get the other departments involved. Anybody got a example of your raw material and how that would affect you or your resources you want to share? Yes, sir.
Well, one thing we found in forecasting that we missed is that the ability for the workforce to grow with the increase in the business. We supply landscape contractors, and there's more business out there than they can do. There's not enough labor to supply landscape contractors, but the industry is flat. We had no
Did everybody catch that? It's a lot of it, with his constraints, if I understand right, has to do with the labor available, skilled labor available. We get into that sometimes with people in our R&D department, technical people. We don't necessarily need the highest priced engineers, but you got to have a certain level of person that understands repair. Any other examples? Yeah. Nope. You scratch your nose. I feel like we're in an auction. If you've done that,
here we go. He's ready over here. Yeah. Yeah. No more questions. Yeah. Now go ahead.
What about people as raw material?
Mm-hmm.
One of the challenges that we faced was crews that had enough experience to do work for repair. And there weren't any crews available. And on top of that, we had some other weather challenges. So accessibility to the location was limited because of weather. And so it took us some time to find some crews that had enough experience. And so what we started doing is bringing some of this work internally. So our guys are learning how to do the work themselves instead of having to outsource that to third-party contractors.
So that influenced, in essence, how you can start growing again where you were typically stuck, right?
Yeah, it influenced our production because with that piece of equipment broken, we couldn't produce until that was fixed.
Yep.
Got another example right here, Matt. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, we manufacture oil and gas equipment, and so
I'm sorry. It's been tough lately. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We plan our lives by the price of oil.
Yeah.
It's not very good right now. But we struggle with this kind of planning. You know, talking about labor as a raw material, you know, I think we go back and forth. Our sales department is, you know, telling our operations, if you could have just made more, we would have sold more. And then the operations are saying, well, if you would have told us what you were going to sell, we would have made it. And so I think we're getting better, but we're such a main, we manufacture everything at our plant in Oklahoma City. And our biggest challenge is reacting as our demand goes up and as the salesmen say they can, you know, sell it, it's ramping up labor quick enough to meet that demand. And that's what we're going to be challenging. You know, as it's flattening a little bit, a little bit of uptick in the oil price is going to cause tremendous strain on us just reacting to that variation. And hiring enough people is going to be our biggest problem.
Right, but the steps that you can take, you know this, right? I mean, you've already talked about forward forecasting, right? You understand that these impacts are there. And the key is that conversation. You can't sit in the room. There's not everybody wants to stand up here in front of a group of people. But when you're having your company meetings, you've got to encourage that communication from the experts in their areas. And that's where that group think comes into play.
We need to share a beverage later on, because what I find so interesting now, the oil and gas, we're tied into it, and anybody who's watched the news about what's going on in North Dakota is a great example. You go through this huge boom, down to this big bust, and then when you forecast in future, how much skepticism is there?
Yeah.
And it's that is a major challenge when you don't have that perfect seasonality or what have you.
Somebody else had their hand up. There we go. Yeah.
It's funny how many people are talking about human resources, and it's probably one of the most stressful parts of my job when you're forecasting, because you know you got bodies and lives involved, and they're constantly asking where do we need to be, because there is a time period before they're ready. It's interesting how many people are bringing that up as a constraint.
You know, that's reminds me of having some of our, at our mid-year and year-end sales presentations, all right? We're doing it twice a year. And typically, when we go over to the corporate side, we've got the board of directors and all of our peers from the other divisions, sales, general manager, accounting, you know, some of the figureheads from each division are there. And then we made a much bigger deal, actually, in the past 5 years to make sure HR was there, right? To that very point. Our forecasting 5 years out was going from, you know, over, you know, 500 million to over a billion. Well, that's great. Cool. You've got the sales identified for that. How many people would we need to hire if we reach that level? And that has become a major focus. We've got a lot of different groups that are focusing on that, and retention and finding and all of that, because we're all going to be stressed in finding those human resources that can fill in and be ready to go when the time comes. We'll talk a little bit about our annual plan, all right? So again, I think it's another great quote, what's managed must be measured. So now that we've talked to you a little bit about the high involvement planning, everything that we've talked about, we've created this forecast, right? What we believe we're gonna hit. You can't just stay in, you know, fantasy land and just say, yeah, I think we'll be here, so let's go ahead and just go forward. Right, you got to put a stake in the ground, and then you got to set your plan. And so during high involvement, we talk about that. They're like, many people are like, well, what if you get into the year and can you adjust your plan? Nope. That's in the line, right? Can't cross that. What we adjust, of course, is our forecast or our projections. This is just I wanted to show you, we truly get into every customer, right? And in our general presentation, you see the macro. You see the macro information, but this is a snapshot of how we would then take what we forecast. And I just showed 2 months. Obviously, we've got the full year's worth of projections of each one of those customers and what we think they're going to do each given month. All right? So now we've kind of, as salespeople, we've drawn the line in the sand. So now who is going to be impacted by this? Anyone? What other departments? might think this is interesting to know. I'm going to say yes. There was a bunch of them, right? Everybody, right? Every other department, your operations, your accounting, I mean, your HR, everybody's going to need to understand, because how many people, all right, we get down to talking about hours in the shop, and that means X amount of people. And so we start backing through all of that. And so now we've drawn a line in the sand, we've put that in there. And then what we show through the year, all right, we actually go through this weekly, right, in our huddles. But at our mid-year presentation, I will update from June to January. What was our plan? What was our projection? All right, I was extremely off this last mid-year, right? 0.04% or 0.4%.
How long did it take you to find that slide?
It was a long time. So, but, I mean, look, again, every example you'll look at. Yeah, I know you're jealous.
Showing off.
It's we didn't hit everything, right? So you look overall, I mean, I will tell you, SRC as a whole, if you go back and look 5 years ago at what we said we were going to be now and through our history, we have been typically within 5 to 7% of the top line number, right? But I promise you, we've had a ton of misses in between on specific programs. And so don't kill yourself over that, but what you want to do is, you know, anything in our company, plus or minus 5%, you need to have a response for it. What's going on? Now, we could get away with maybe not talking a whole lot about this particular example, but if we were 10% off on processing, or 10% over, can be just as bad as 10% under. So, again, talking about this and seeing what's going on, that wasn't a mid-year surprise. We were seeing this every week, every month, as we reported our numbers to get to that point. And that's what I encourage you in your business, make sure you're talking about it a lot. Don't have that surprise. Oh, wow, we're way over on this. Do we really have the resources to support this? Are we buying enough inventory to make sure we're going to be able to continue this? Do we have the cash to maintain this, right? So, again, this we update this, and then we ultimately, at the end of the high involvement planning process, we're going to say, here's where we're going to be for the year, which our year end is coming up. Year end presentations are coming up next month, right? So I've already got updates that will change this. But you see our plan here being at $20,615,000, what we're projected to be at $21,091,000, right? That's okay. We're in pretty good shape. I will tell you, actually, it's now going to be, when we do our final presentation, it's going to be $21,600,000, roughly $1 million over what our plan was, 4.7%.
Does anybody see a problem with this slide? Anybody see something? How can it go up?
Oh.
What do you see?
What's the reason for that dip from 2017 or 18? Is there?
You're an executive. I love you. That's exactly the right question.
Yeah. Recession was just mentioned right here, so I know you were listening. That's a big, come on, bring up something good, like a T-shirt. How about a medium? You got a medium T-shirt back there? That's a good one. Yeah, okay, so the recession, we talked about that. That plays a part in our business. I will tell you, though, that in our particular business, we are such a small percentage of the overall potential market. You can fight through a lot of recessionary issues by going and finding more clients, right? And even though they may be down, new business is new business to you, right? So you can offset a little bit of that. It just happens to be in 2018, going back to our mid-year presentation, one of our major customers, we had a contract that was ending in that year, right? And what we didn't have at that particular time is we didn't have confirmation yet. We were in discussions with it. We knew it was coming, right? And we were anticipating that, hey, they could insource that particular piece of business. I can't in good faith tell the corporation, we'll be fine, just keep it going. So we made the adjustment, and it sticks out. All right, that's a problem, right? It's 2016, that's 2018. Get out there and go find something. But at that particular time, I got to call it like it is. I didn't have anything lined up. What we have since done is we've gone back. We did get the confirmation. We've extended the agreement. So now you're going to see that change at my year end for 2018, that it's going to go up, because we extended it another year. That gives me another year's worth of time to find future business to keep 2019 and beyond going in the direction that we all need our businesses to go. in order to sustain, you know, and increase the shareholder value. So, again, it's but if I wasn't looking at it, if I was only talking about the existing year we were in, you're not going to see those things. You're not going to predict those or even have time to react. Yes? Because replacement of business. So if you look in the pipeline and you look at some of the things that we talk about, the HIP group yesterday did get to see it, if they recall. We detailed out some very specific programs that we are quite confident, all right, it's not a guarantee yet, but quite confident we're going to land. And the scheduling of that, talking to our customer, it would not hit until 2019 or beyond. So, but again, that points out the fact that you need to go fill that in, because how can you all get behind a plan that shows you going like this and you don't have any response? You had a question?
Can I assume you developed a contingency plan?
Absolutely. Actually had one, just didn't have things locked in. And one was trying to negotiate this contract, right, and make sure that that was be the easiest, right? It's a lot less expensive to keep a customer than to go find a new one. Yeah, into the forecasting, the contingencies is we typically tried to pick a percentage of our base business, all right, that we needed to at least identify, and we would say 10 to 15% of your normal sales you should have identified in pipeline, contingencies, things of that nature that you've identified. There's a population out there, or, hey, we need to expand our focus in California on schools out there to get them to come to Missouri. Right, and identify those additional targets. So we go through that contingency planning, and we rate it, and we grade it, and determine what else do we need to do, all right, to have it ready when we need it, or at least try to pursue it, move it up in your priorities to land that piece of business. That's a whole nother class, I'll tell you. And it's not mine, but yeah. Yes?
I'll get you.
How much does the
previous 5 years play in the forecast?
It's an influence, but you sure don't want it to be an anchor, just a rudder, right? Because what we're doing every year, we're out there looking, you know, at what's going on. Now, of course, if you see, hey, if you can go back far enough and you can see other recessions and what did your business typically do during those times, right, that helps you in preparing or at least having a better idea of what you should do going forward in the event something like that's going to happen. But you want as much data, historical, future, you know, current, customer, you know, the experts in the marketplace to play a role in that. And I would
look at that and say you've got a 20% growth and then there's some leveling off that some companies need to adjust to before the next growth.
Yeah, well, I'm going through, like I said, in 6 months. Well, next month when I update my 5-year forecast, because I've learned more since the last one, it's updated. It is heading up. It's actually, it'll be a 49% growth by the time I get out to 2021. That's, you know, you got to be careful with that. I'm in a service business. I can react a little bit better. But if I was having to develop, you know, 50 more engines and high R&D expenses, could you cash flow that? You know, salespeople don't normally talk about weird things like that, right? We just go sell it. But, you know, that's part of this communication. And then you're sitting in that meeting and your engineers are saying, that's great. You can sell that Cummins engine. He was talking about it. But who are you going to get it from? Because we're not going to make it. So that can't go in Darren's plan. And that's where that little confrontational issues can come up sometimes. It's frustrating. Well, then what can we do? Let's put all the minds together in this room and figure out how we can solve this. I saw a question back there. Yeah.
I have a two-part question.
We're only allowing one today, but you. All right, go ahead.
One question with two halves. So your 2016 forecast, first of all, what was it 3 years ago? And then second, how is SRC using the 2019, 20, and 21 forecasts now? Like, how much weight are you putting on it?
Okay, what were we 3 years ago? That was 1 year prior to me going over. About $11 million in sales at this division. That sound about right, Rennie?
Yeah.
And then, obviously, we got up to, we did $15 million last year. I can't remember the one in between, somewhere
14,
in between those.
I think.
Yeah. And so anyway, looking at that, you're sitting there going, even going from 15 at year end, of 2015, the plan for 2016 was originally about 15,800,000. If you see here, that plan went to 20 million. What happened between my year end and my next mid-year? We landed a contingency that we'd been working on. It was a $10 million annualized piece of business, and it didn't launch until we knew it wasn't going to launch until mid-year, so we were only going to experience a little bit of that, and so therefore it changed. Had a big influence looking back, right? So we utilized that. Now going forward, again, I take those same things into consideration. Every customer, I look at what their business is predicted to be. I don't come up with that. I talk to the customer. What do you think your business is going to be? And if you treat your customers like accountants and everybody else treats salespeople, you'll take that number, divide it by two, then divide it by two again, right? It's just the way it is. And so, you know, that's where you want to be smart about it. You want to be accurate as possible, but use that information from your customers.
And I think to feed off, you asked, well, how do we utilize the future years? Human resources is a big part of it. And then also we look at a lot of it with the capital investments in our plant. Where do we need to be focused on to make better, greater efficiencies and things of that nature? Got it. So,
Matt, Darren, you have some questions.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry.
Darren?
What issue did we have in particular? Some of our customers are not in tune with what they see coming down the pipeline, or they're not really willing to share exactly what they're saying, what they're forecasting. So it kind of puts this on us to kind of guess for them. Do you guys have any tools or things that you use in?
I swear, were you planted? I kid you not, I've been, the next section is going to get into that.
Perfect.
It is. You set me up perfect. And what's crazy about it is I was hesitant because I'm going to get into some pretty big, pretty strenuous details here in a minute about how we utilize that information. So let me do it and I'll come back to you. Yes, sir. Yes.
And so you're basing your forecast 1, 2, 3 years out based on that, your expectation of continuation and discounting for potential not renewal. Our business is old project.
Yep.
We might be able to have a client once repeat business, but it's there's no reason to assume it'll happen. What do you do for long-term forecasting where your business is heavily dependent on one-off projects from a
it's where it gets challenging, and what's interesting, I love to tell our people, is just because we have a contract does not mean we're shipping any goods. A contract's basically just an alignment of how we're going to do business together, puts up nice fences, drawing in that demand from the dealers and on up the supply chain or the pipeline is so challenging. I think I would implore is on the salespeople, and this is where it gets really uncomfortable for them, is, well, I don't know if I'm going to get that next project. I don't know if I'm going to, but that's where they have to sign up and make that commitment. Even if they're wrong, at least it's a plan that you can work through. I think the other thing is it can be used as a closing opportunity with your clients. When you're talking about, look, we're trying to plan our resources. I use this all the time with our OEMs. We're trying to plan our resources and what needs to be taken care of for the next quarter, the next year. And if we were to land your business, I'm going to have to go out and start hiring. Usually when you bring a people element into it, every business person can relate to that. And then you start trying to utilize that to say, give me some kind of an idea. What is a possibility we're going to be doing business together or not? If you can draw them in onto your planning, it will speak volumes to them about how serious you take your business. I'll give you a quick personal story, then I want to get to your point. So I'm not a sales guy, I'm an imposter. I was a supply chain operations guy, and one of the companies I worked for was a plastics injection molding company, Jarden Corporation. We had 30 presses in a just pristine area punching out shotgun shell wads for Winchester and Remington, billions a year. You'd walk through this plant, and there's these machines. And I remember, I think that's when I had my first panic attack. When I first walked in, they're just chunking out this plastic wads every day, every minute, and they're just piling up. And guess who handled our inventory and our forecasting with our customer? It was the same position. This is when it really drove home to me on how closely tied they were. One guy who had it all in his head. He was brilliant. He was the hardest working guy in the business. Everybody loved him. But if something happened to him, we were going to derail. And guess what? Something happened to him, and he didn't show up for work anymore. And I'm standing there with these machines chunking out material and had no idea what we needed. I begged Winchester and Remington. Literally, it took me months to get them to please share with me what you're going to be using to produce. I looked at annual volumes of seasonality and knew there were certain shotgun shell wads for duck hunting that were going to be at a peak. I looked at historical numbers and what the highest volumes were and realized there are some presses that need to run all the time, never shut down. And we're going to build a tremendous amount of inventory, but even if we do, we'll still be barely able to meet their needs. And I finally convinced them, and it was not easy. But when we did, it was amazing the impact it had on our company. To change out a tool in a plastic injection molding machine takes up to 2 days at times. It's very expensive to do. We got to where we were making like five a day down to one a week. We also took our overtime and slashed it. We calmed that place down so much that they would create crisis in the beginning because they weren't used to having a normal schedule that they could build to. The most important part was the customer. Winchester hated our guts. I could not get these guys off center. But when we finally got them engaged and stuff, we became supplier of the year in 2 years after that. That's how the forecasting really came into play. This Chinese proverb, this is a very simple formula that we use. And you take your customer demand. What are they using? Then you look at what do they have on the shelf today. You add in what they have on order with you, right? Because that's going to be added into what's going to be on the shelf. And then you look at what the safety stock needs to be. Now, I know some of you guys aren't business to business, but let's be honest. In any channel of taking product or services to the market, there's going to be some type of buffer in there to deal with all the unknowns. That's the safety stock. That's the stuff that saves your hide and when things peak or when they decrease, and you hope you get it right. We work with our customers to get this information, and here's the biggest impact. When you can walk into a customer, instead of saying, hey, what's your business going to be like next year? How do you act upon that? What really do you get from that? But when you walk into them saying, all right, here's a list of part numbers we work with you. I know you may not be the guy to tell me, but who in your company can tell me what is your desired safety stock level? And they're going to tell you most of the time, I don't need you in my business. I don't need you forecasting for me. But when you go to them and you explain to them, you've got to understand how it works upstream. And you've got to understand that all I'm trying to do is make sure I'm taking care of you the best way possible. What kind of a salesperson do you have then? Just imagine if you can elevate your guys that are talking to the customers to that level of a conversation. Now they become businessmen. They're not just there peddling goods. And they're actually adding value. What I love about it is you can tell a customer you care about their business all day long. This demonstrates it. It makes it more realistic. And you will find you'll get your arms into other departments inside your customer that are outside just the regular purchasing channels. A lot of these times you're not going to have just one person. A lot of times you're going to be dealing with the owner of your small business. Not trying to intimidate you with data, you will get this. You can find me on LinkedIn if you have questions. But I wanted to just show you a quick example how we use it. I threw up three part numbers. There's customer demand. The gentleman, you mentioned, you know, how do you use past demand? Well, that's historical demand averaged out over a 12-month period. Is it perfect? No. Do we take into seasonality? Yeah, we have some algorithms we use, but that's ultimately it. There's the inventory the customer has on hand right now. So based upon that number, and here's their desired safety stock. This is what they have on open order. This is a good customer that gives us open orders out almost 6 months in advance. And here are their safety stock levels. And then this is where we add in what we expect them to order in the future months to maintain those safety stock levels. And here's what always happens with a customer. You get in here and you think, look at this. We got 11, 10, 21. Man, we better double down the next month and build up maybe 30 at that rate of growth. No. If you look at their inventory levels, they're overbuying.
So why would that potentially be zero there? Any ideas? Any thoughts? Maybe seasonality could be. They ran a special and they drove their market up. But to Darren's point, you don't want to miss it. We have done that many times. Wow, it's taken off. And then we buy all the material, right, to support that continued growth. And now you've tied up your cash and you're without orders going forward.
This is an example just moving out. You'll get this. And again, all we're doing is the exact same formula, but you're adding in more of the months that you already have to go out to the future months. Yes, sir, I saw your hand up.
Yes, sir. All this information is great. I just have one question. You mentioned that cash flow and capital. You can grow yourself out of business. Mm-hmm. And so when you start looking at these numbers, you guys have to weigh in what you have to work with, and also the numbers for the days on hand, and how you stress your cash flow so you don't jeopardize the whole operation. I think some of that is because you really run out of cash.
I didn't catch the actual question.
I'm asking, if the question is I see all these other parameters, but the things that make these things go is your cash flow that pays to make it go. So my question is, in these calculations, do you look at inventory days on hand, accounts receivable days on hand, how that will stretch your cash flow, and a 5-year projection, are you looking at what type of capital you're going to have available?
Yes.
So you can make those decisions. If you grow too fast, you can grow yourself out of the
business. Absolutely.
We got an example on that. I got to experience that, right? I mean, the question, yes, we do take that into consideration, but typically it takes you to get burnt before you start looking at that, right? Many times that happens. And I was over at another division, our electrical division. We put our plan in, right? And we thought we had it all pretty accurate. It looked like a pretty solid growth opportunity. We exceeded our expectations with the customer. And, man, they started dropping in orders. And, I mean, this happened quick, like within a month quick, huge orders. So it was over $1 million over our plan in 1 month. So celebration, everybody's high-five, and, man, we're going to knock this plan out. Great, get it all on order, supply chain orders it all. Everything's good. Suppliers are going, wow, where'd this come from? It's like, because we're such good forecasters. And so we hit it, and then we're sitting there, we're going through the numbers. We go through, every week we're looking at, you know, our order board. We're going through the cash flow. And, oh, that's weird. The cash flow is, oh, my gosh, we're not going to make payroll. This is real. This is for real. We were not going to make payroll. All right? I work for SRC. We don't make these mistakes, right? Now, the beauty of SRC, and not everybody's got this friendly Holdings Corporation, they were like, don't worry about it. Jack's real easy on us when we miss things like that. Right? We'll take care of you. How much cash you need? Oh, okay, great. 11.3% interest? Does that sound okay? Yeah. Because at that particular time, you can go to a bank, because the bank would say, yeah, I'll loan you $1 million. Put $1.5 million in the bank, and I'll loan you back $1 million. Right? The banks, we couldn't do that anyway with the Holdings Corporation, but so they loaned us the money. They got us out of the situation. So taking that experience of, I mean, that's crazy. I mean, you sit there and think, wow, how could you grow so fast and, you know, and run out? You didn't realize it. And we all got a major education. It's great to blow your sales plan out if you're planning on it. That $10 million piece of business at the division that I'm at now that we landed, tail end of last year, we ran through every one of the financial projections on how many people, how much money, how much shrink rep we need, how many. I mean, we went through all of it. Here's the cash it's going to take, right, in order to do that. So it is a critical thing that we do look at. You run a P&L on this potential business or what you think is going to happen in the future to make sure you don't miss that forecast and run yourself out of cash.
15% has always been the number I've been told. You grow more than 15%, your cash is at risk. And to also answer your question, what we do with these numbers in sales is we run it through our financials that we're looking at each week, and then the part of that is the cash flow. So we keep our eyes on it, but you're exactly right. It's, you know, you want to go out and get the kill for the new customer or what have you, and it can create some havoc. I want to come back to your question about customers and forecasting. We do a lot of customers that, quite frankly, software does everything for them. And when I was in supply chain or operations, I tried every software in the world to try and use for, you know, forecasting production, and I found it's difficult. And when we were dealing with a lot of these customers, no human interaction, just numbers being spit out with orders, and we were finding, okay, why are they ordering more of this? It doesn't make sense. Nobody gave us answers, and then they would be low. We finally just took the approach, we're going to do it for them. It's costly, but in the long run, we're going to save money, and we're going to hang on a little bit more, be able to manage our cash a little better. But if you do that, you utilize it to your advantage and show them the work you're doing so they understand this is not like a regular supplier or somebody who's taking care of me. You ready to get into the weekly financials, sir?
Let's do it.
You want this clicker?
I think, you know, again, as we get close to the end here, this really does say a lot about how we live our lives at SRC, and hopefully you do as well. You've got to forecast and forecast often, right? Nobody's going to get that magic 100% accuracy. If you do, you need to have this class yourself next year and share it with all of us. And so, again, the frequency is going to allow you to become more accurate and manage your business better. And so this goes back to some of the things we talked about. What is your forecast? Data plus assumptions, right? Week one, you don't have as much data, right? You have to make more assumptions on how that month or, again, anything you're looking at is how it's going to end up. You get down to week four, you have a lot more data and you can be real accurate. You have very little assumptions left in how you're going to hit your month, right? And that's why we do that weekly huddle and all that information, all right? What's the story behind the numbers? Remember we talk about, you know, plus or minus 5%? Whoever's in charge of that number needs to explain why, right? And it's not just to call somebody out. You see that big circle there, can create confrontation, but that is okay. Right? Because as salespeople at SRC, we've learned that we don't just get to throw the grenade over the wall and run away, right? There's a ripple effect. You impact everybody that you sell something. It starts with us, but everybody's got a part to play. And so you want to explain your deviations. What are the risks? What are the opportunities? If it's dropping off, if you're going up that mountain and you're going fast, right? You know, how much more fuel are you going to need to get there? So that is very important on that communication, all right? So on this is a example sheet of what you would go through in a weekly huddle at SRC, and you may have seen this before. But you see each one of those areas. You got sales, you know, cost of sales, which gets your materials, your labor. Each person owns one of those. There's stories and people behind every one of those numbers, right? And so we would always start with sales, and we'd say, here's where we're going to be. Well, but you said your plan was 125, and you're dropping it down. Why? So then I have to explain that. Same thing, it gets down below. Hey, if we're going to miss our number, what can we do? It's a team sport, right? Right? What can we do to drop some costs out to maybe save us for that given month? Maybe, and again, I always like to, you know, go head-to-head with somebody who says, hey, cut out your sales trips, right? But let's be smart about it. There may be a trip I could cut back. Maybe I can save a few thousand dollars. That adds up. That might be the difference in what we can do to just hit that number for that given month, right? And maybe plan a little bit better out in the future. So everybody plays a part in this. And again, this example template, when you see it, you know, it might be something that you can go through and put a name on each one of them, right? Just like here, Bob, Mike, Sarah, whoever. You're not trying to go into the meeting just to surprise them and, you know, get them, you know, dress them down in front of the whole organization. But they owe it. They owe it to the organization if they're that expert. And we'll mix it up. right? I don't always report the sales at logistics. Rennie will report them some weeks, you know, and we'll go back and forth. So spread it around. And so when you go into those meetings, you want to know what's behind the number, right? Daily forward forecasting, all right? The key to making a good forecast is not limiting yourself to quantitative information. Yes, accountants, it's not just about the numbers, right? There is more to it. And if there are any accountants in here, I'm really, you know, I love you, right? You guys usually cut the checks, so. But it's very important that we take the stories behind them, all right? Yes, I mean, numbers are right there. They're black and white from that standpoint. But we want to make sure we're getting all the information in to assure that we're really eyes open, ears open going forward. So what's your commitment, right? As I asked, everybody in this room has a chance to influence the numbers. Everybody in this room has a job that can impact the forecast, all right? Or you've got a result from that forecast that you've got to make some decisions on. So what is the single most important thing? And you say this. I want everybody to say this because we haven't been loud in a while, all right? Everybody say that. What is excellent. Real quick, we're going to do one more real loud clap because we're getting towards the end here. Yes. All right. So, I love it. All right. Again, each one of you has a part to play. It's not just the owner. All right. It's not just the management team. It's all of us. And that's what we want to make sure. Here's some quotes here from Jack Stack. We find him to be a very impressive person and his views of the world.
He's not here, Matt.
Oh. Okay. Well, this is being recorded, so. All right. Go down to that last part there. If you have doubts, go communicate. Talk it out. Take action. Because that's what we have to do. Every one of us have to be a part of this. And so try encouraging that in your next meetings to make sure that you're getting that input from them. And yeah, I know salespeople, we don't like to commit to a number. We like to have this, we're going to be somewhere in there. And then when we don't get it, we say, well, I didn't say there, I meant here. Yeah. Right? No, that's the joys of having a plan, right? And so we do have that line. But again, we want to make sure everybody is adding their input.
All right. I really don't know who made up this quote, but I liked it, so I threw it up there and gave it, made up a name for it.
Yeah.
It's all about the influence. I think that's part of the stress we have on the forecasting is, oh my gosh, what if I'm wrong? Nobody wants to be wrong. Nobody does. But if you can just get, look, it's to help influence the numbers. Next slide. We did an experiment. Mr. Moody, I'm going to embarrass you. Would you please stand up? Uh-huh. Mr. Dan Moody from SRC Heavy Duty is kind of the head ringer of this whole deal. But we had let me back up. Matt, Rich Armstrong, and I were at lunch trying to talk about how can we demonstrate forecasting? What's a great demonstration that's not within a business setting? So we've got this contest going on, and, you know, who can lose the most weight by company and by individual? Well, in the next slide, we took 51 people out of this. And there's how many people participating?
Over 400.
400. Yeah. So we grabbed 51 of them. And 29 of them came up to us, and you know, we tried to be real discreet about it and told them, yeah, I've got a forecast. I've got a goal. I've got a gentleman in engineering that not only told me that, but his caloric intake and how much he burns through exercise. I mean, he had it down to a science. Okay, that's forecasting. And then you had other groups like, see what happens, you know, and come on, let's be real. That's typical. And think about the way we do our business. Let's hope for the future and let's just hope we're going to get the sales to come in. The most important part of this, and I swear to you, we did not know what the outcome was going to be, was that those that set a goal lost almost 4 pounds more than those who didn't in a 1 month time period. And on the next slide, The key to this was those that had a goal, the way they behaved. They had a specific discipline, you know, the exercise and the diet. They had planning. I'll give you a quick story on this. We have this big golf outing every year. I've got some big, burly dudes that work over in our plant. And these guys, I swear to you, if you'd have ever told me they would be on the web looking up low-calorie cocktails before a big golf outing, I said, you're nuts. They were keeping score individually, and this is the part I love giving them crap about. So there's these different apps, you know, MyFitness apps and stuff. You can track your calories. They are eating like skinny popcorn and tracking their calories, and that goes right into the trash talking and encouragement. I mean, last night we went out and had Tex-Mex, and we were bad-mouthing every time you grab a chip with the guacamole, but it, you know, it creates that environment. And then at the last part was the reward. There is a financial benefit to the end. But the next slide is one I think is most important. To take a little bit of the stress off of the forecasting piece, these guys put their numbers out there. They shared them with me prior to the results. They were within 1 pound. They missed it, but they won, right? I mean, they missed it by 1 pound. For you data nerds out there, regression analysis, we ran this, 0.79. Don't you love numbers? 0.79, a one is perfect. That's how close they came to meeting their goal. And 42% reached or exceeded it. Again, it's all over the board, but the overall outcome was good. And the best part is how you measure that. How do you measure that accomplishment? I've seen people's lives change. Matt used to weigh 450 pounds.
2 weeks ago. Great. Yeah. But I knew I was going to do it. Yeah.
How are we doing on time?
We got about 5 minutes, I think.
Got 5 minutes? What about takeaways? Is that a good place to start or with questions? What can we, anybody got anything they want to share before we get out of here?
Yes, sir. Yeah, so in our process on the HIP, you know, we're doing it twice a year. So we'll have the one in October. When we're done with our presentation in October of what our forecast is, we're going to hardline 2017, right? Right after that. So that's when we will take it into, from all the information we've gathered, we'll put our budget in place for, and that usually takes place in October, November, and then it's firmed up solid by December because Feb 1 is our new year. So then when we look at the division that I'm at, we've got a 400,000 square foot facility. It's full now, so we need to factor in some additional warehousing space, right, for next year if we're going to achieve the processing and the warehousing forecast that we've got in for that future year. If they're not going to do that, that's where we'd make an adjustment. As a salesperson, then we'll back off and say, I can't get it there because you don't have the CapEx. You're not investing in the equipment or whatever. And so that's typically when it takes place for us. It starts being talked about. Every time you're looking at that five-year forecast, we look at the human resources that we said, what are we going to need in 2021? And so that is kind of an ongoing open discussion. But then you got to get serious and then come up with the money to get that warehouse that we're going to need for 2017. And that will be determined, and we've already started making some moves on that, on renting some additional space. Just because of the way that it's pretty solid, you know, what we have coming down the pipeline.
I think what's important is after we do our plans, we put our budgets together, we have a board that we present in front of who asks us a lot of tough questions. I used to be part of a very small business. We did a startup, and we elected to bring in some people we knew that were really smart business people. We pay them a little bit, buy them lunch for that exact same purpose. I don't want you to feel like you got to be a big corporation to have a board, but I think it is so important to have someone with some business knowledge to scrutinize your numbers and ask you a lot of tough questions.
Yeah.
And that's usually one of the ones, the first question they'll usually ask is where are you going to find the people? How are you going to be prepared for this? Mm-hmm. Did I see a hand? Yes, sir. Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. This is just the first
every
step.
Week. Every week we're looking at that.
Yes, sir. It.
So in the spirit of high involvement planning, you know, on a weekly basis from the forecasting, we have everybody in there. You know, there's a whole bunch of people. But how many people do you have involved in that 5-year plan? You know, it seems like we've got a ton at the week level, a little less in the annual level, and less in 5 years.
So everybody's in the weekly meetings, right, looking at what's happening now. When we do the preparation for like the mid-year and the year-end, high involvement, right, we'll put, the sales team will put together the numbers, right, and then we're going to get everybody in, the whole company gets presented to, right, and that's when we lay that out. As in for the some of the micro details of that, hey, $31 million, what's that going to entail, we'll have like a small staff meeting to where each one of the heads of the departments will get involved in that and sometimes some of the supervisor role. So, but everybody by the end of the process has been involved in that, and we get, you know, graded on how much buy-in we get in to the plan.
I was going to say, it's funny you brought that up. So when we get into our 5-year, even though it's a bigger number, we typically have a smaller group, but we try to have people who are like heads or experts of their divisions or their departments, and then we start walking through it.
Rennie?
Do we have time for one other?
Yeah.
Go ahead, young lady.
So you have the 2016 plan, and you do projection. When do you start that?
October. Yeah. If Matt and I look a little stressed, it's coming. And we start laying out our, we do the high involvement planning, the sales and marketing presentations, putting the numbers together. And then once that's bought in, it immediately goes into the budgetary process, and we run all the financials off of that.
Well, I mean, like, in 2016, do you start, like, early part of the year? You'll start
the previous year.
Yeah.
So the end of, so we're, 2016 was set in October of 2015,
yes.
Right? And so 2017, we will be setting here in another month, and then we'll finalize it within a couple of month period. For the following year.
So basically a quarter ahead.
2016 projection, you're already starting early part of the year.
Oh. So that's the projection, there's an actual and then a projection, right? And so when you saw the one slide where it showed June through January through June, or whenever what the months were, what we did is we stated that we had some actual numbers, plus there was still a month left, all right, and that we put in projection. And then I go to the tail end and look out the remainder of the year. It's a projection, or you could say a forecasted number that we're intending to hit. That is happening every week of every month in that existing year. And you're basing it against, you're grading yourself against your plan. Does that answer your question? Okay.
All right. Yeah. All right.
Okay, guys, a couple of housekeeping. You have your evaluations in front of you. Please fill them out and leave them on the table. I know that some of you guys will stay and chat, but if you can fill out your evaluations before you chat so I can eat lunch too, I would appreciate it.
That's great. Thank you all very much.
Also, download the app, The Great Game of Business. Post what you like the best, and let's give Darren and Matt a round of applause.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.